The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Nice to see you all on a cold day. It got cold again. It's one thing you can pretty much guarantee around here that the weather's going to change. It'd be nice if we got some snow. So when Reverend Master Jiyu Kennett went to Japan to do her training, she was asked by someone what she wanted of the training. Okay? And she said she wanted the perfection of Zen. Well, of course, that kind of, you know, the person kind of stepped back, because people usually don't quite say that. You know, there's some kind of maybe Zen story saying that they say, but you know, she cut right to it. You know, in hindsight, I think she would be the first to say that although she wanted to find the perfection of Zen, she actually didn't know what the depth of that perfection was. I mean, how could you? You know, she was just starting her training. And she, like all of us, were all very full of ideas and opinions and views of how we think things are. It's kind of the human condition. And there's nothing wrong with this, except when we're faced with the reality of the way things are, and we're clinging to something else, you know, our ideas, our opinions, our views, it can be a little difficult because it's not, you know, they're not meeting, okay, they're not intersecting. So many of us, and I definitely include myself in this, we can't not always accept the way life plays out. As a consequence, we get frustrated, upset, unhappy, and maybe sometimes we even go so far as to get angry. Well, all these reactions are actually, as we sort of know, the road to suffering, not the road to the cessation of suffering. You know, and the Buddha always taught that there is suffering, and he always taught that there's a cessation of suffering. And of course, we don't want to stay with suffering. So it's not that we don't have a say or an influence in the causes and conditions of our lives. We very much do. Okay. You know, we make choices. Choices have consequences. We can do this. We can do that. We can go here. We can go there. I mean, you know, there's choices. We have an influence and effect. And in our practice, as you know, we say that what we're trying to do is do something about ourselves, that we have a responsibility for ourselves. Okay? We can't say that that's anybody else's. It's for us to be responsible for ourselves. Through the practice of the precepts in our daily lives, excuse me, through attention to mindfulness and through attention and mindfulness to cause and effect in our daily lives, through a consistent practice of meditation, and through the study of the Buddha Dharma, we can live our lives in a way that benefits ourselves and other beings. There's just no doubt of that. And we cannot control everything that surrounds us. It's just a reality. You know, we're just this small part of an enormous picture, okay? You know, in some ways, we can do all kinds of things to help us physically, and, you know, the body still grows old and eventually it dies, okay? So all causes and conditions are not within our control. So we have to, as much as we need to be responsible for ourselves and our actions, we have to realize that not all causes, conditions, not everything around us, we can't control it. Things happen. Master Jiyu was very fond of the Buddhist saying, hope for the best, plan for the worst, and do the possible. Or sometimes we say, do the best you can. It's not that we're pessimistic. Rather, we're not blindly idealistic. Okay? Maybe best put, we're realistic. Buddhism is realistic. Now, unfortunately, I think sometimes people that don't know a lot about Buddhism, they kind of get attached to we talk about suffering, you know, being something that's there in life, and then they conclude all we talk about is suffering. But I mean, if you know anything, you know a little bit about Buddhism, you know that's not true. Because there is a cessation of suffering. So all kinds of things happen in life. Fighting their reality might not be the most useful course sometimes. Better maybe to accept them and see where we can move, how we can move with them or around them. You know, sometimes it's not the best thing to meet something head on. You have to step back sometimes from things, or you have to step aside. You know, if you're in a bad situation and you can get out of it, you get out of it. That's fine. Okay. On the back of one of my small kesas that we wear in our daily lives that the monks wear, there's a saying from the great Zen master, Hong Zhu, if I'm saying that correctly. So it says on the back of my rocks, it says, my small kesa, a patched robe monk follows movement and responds to change in total harmony. Okay, so life, causes and conditions are constantly changing. You know, that's one of the basic facts that Buddhism points out about life. Things are constantly changing. Okay, we may not shape them. They may just come at us. But we need to respond to them. And if we do this from a place of stillness and acceptance, we'll find a more fluid and peaceful way to proceed, as opposed to having a big argument or being super aggressive. You know, just be still a bit. Venerable Hong Zhu lived in the 10th and 11th century, or excuse me, 10 and 1100s in China. Okay. And, you know, the question I pose is our present-day world so different than his? Was he saying something that was true then but not true now? Well, actually, I think he was talking about something that was universal. So we live in this really high-tech world, but the human mind, it's the same mind that was back then, you know, and the same basic things that human beings deal with. He was dealing with, in fact, the Buddha, if you go back 2,500 years, was dealing with a lot of the same things that we were dealing with. No, it wasn't high-tech, and there wasn't cell phones and this and that, but, you know, life had its complications then, and it had its conditions, and there was a lot of things that he could not control. So being born as a human being, as we all know, probably at some point in time we're going to get sick. There's a bad flu going around this year. You know, and unfortunately for some people, it's been fatal. It's, you know, it's a nasty flu. And if we're lucky, we age. Not everybody ages. You know, but if we're lucky, we age. And eventually we die. I mean, those are just all realities. So in life, and I'm not saying specifically illness, old age, and death are suffering, but there's a suffering that goes on in life. There's a, but there's also, as we know from the teachings of the Buddha, a cause of the suffering, okay? And there's a possible release and cessation of suffering. And for a follower of the Buddha, there's a path that will help us find a place of peace and equanimity amidst the impermanence of existence. So, and to find the Buddha's teachings in this life, in this body and mind, that's a pretty incredible blessing. There's just no doubt of that. And to wholeheartedly practice the Buddha's teachings is even more of a blessing, because you can find something that you find that you feel to be valuable, but it's the taking up of it and the following of it, which of course benefits ourselves and others, and it's the doing of the work. Okay. There's a lovely refrain in a poem, a song by Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen was a Buddhist. He was a performer. And it's from this piece called The Anthem. I think at other Dharma talks, monks have mentioned this. I'm sorry about this. The papers curl over and I don't want to lose them. Okay, so it goes, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Okay. So if you ever hit a cracked bell, it doesn't sound very very good. You know, but if that's all you got is bells that are cracked, what are you going to do? Go on a tear to try to find an uncracked bell. We just got, some of our bells here. I don't know if we got them because they were cracked or we just didn't have a lot of money. So bell from Japan cost the earth. So we mended them. We had them welded. So maybe the sound isn't perfect, but. It's still a good sound. Okay. And if what you've got is a cracked bell, then you just say, oh, okay, I got to go with this. So if we cannot accept what is right in front of us, we want something better or different, we won't be able to see the wholeness, beauty, and depth of the way things are right now. Because we're going to be looking out, we're looking elsewhere. We're not satisfied. Okay. At a point, when Master Jiyu, if you read The Wild White Goose, when she's in Japan, she's kind of a bit fed up with things there. People aren't so nice to her, or at least aren't nice in the way that she thought it might be in a monastery. But, it's kind of difficult, so she's going to leave. And I think she actually sets off into the hills outside of Sojiji, walking away. And after a while, she realizes, no, I got to go back. I got to go back. And shortly after she gets back, she has a real breakthrough, and it happens to coincide with something very practical. I think she was mopping the floor, but anyway, there's a bucket of mop water which is not very clean because the mop's been going in and out to mop the floor. But she looks at the water. And she realizes that dirty water is actually pure. It's not this awful thing. And it's, in a way, the realization is that although there's all kinds of craziness going on around her, the value of what she's doing and where she's doing it at is something that's worth staying with. And so she did. Lucky for us. If we try to make everything perfect, we're actually trying to control conditions. Okay? We're trying to make it the way we want it, the way we'd like things to be. Believe you me, I'm the first to say that if I like it when people are nice to me, I like it when things go smoothly, I like it when people get along. I was once in the DMV in town, and the person in front of the counter and the person behind the counter were throwing papers at each other back and forth. And I thought, oh, my God, what's going to happen here? I don't particularly find those situations very comfortable. But they worked it out. There was no major blood spilt. Everybody likes it when things go smoothly and when everybody gets along, and of course, everybody likes it when people like our opinions and what we did and how we're doing things. But the fact of the matter is, it just doesn't happen all the time. It doesn't happen in a monastery, And if we, you know, if we're kind of coming from this point of wanting everything to be perfect, well, we're just going to be constantly frustrated and annoyed about life because it doesn't play out that way. Okay? On the other hand, there's nothing wrong with planning and hoping. But overly planning and overly idealizing, well, what happens when it doesn't work out? You're kind of stuck there. You can be stuck there. You know, it's a little harder to move from there. Okay. So many of you know that I was the cook here for a number of years. And I put a lot of effort, because I didn't have a lot of knowledge. I like to eat, but I didn't have a lot of knowledge about cooking and nutrition and, you know, the things you did as when you cook for a lot of people. So I took a real study of it. I used to take cookbooks to my room, you know, and read them before I went to bed, just so I could get, because I knew for myself I wouldn't want to eat the same thing every day. You know, variety is kind of nice in food, okay? And I felt the responsibility of cooking nutritious food, okay? You know, we usually can go too far that way, but you know, people are eating what you serve and eating it day after day, so it's good if it's decent for them. Okay. And you know, I studied about taking care of the machinery in the kitchen and the way that things play out in a kitchen, like a big monastic kitchen, or okay. And I don't regret any of that planning, okay? But what I found in time was that if I overly planned, you know, if I was just had it all, because I could be 5 days ahead on the menus and what to do, and you know, and there's a point to kind of preparing things ahead of time, you know, so in case something happens and you can't put the amount of time in to prepare something that for the day after, you know, you've already done it. So this is a point to that. But anyway, I didn't find that really, it wasn't making the cooking very joyful, I found when I was overly planned. So I kind of loosened up. I went back to, I just tried to hang loose a bit with the whole situation. You know, I had a plan. I mean, I worked with people in the kitchen as a younger monk who had no plan. And it got to 10 o'clock the day of the meal, and we still hadn't had to exactly know what we were going to have for lunch. Ooh, that was suffering, you know. It was really. but if it, for me, I found if you're overly planned, it's not a good idea. Because things happen, you know. You make a food order, and you know you got your menu tailored to this food order, and then the food doesn't come. Or the food comes and it's in bad shape, or you find out from the person, the head of the monastery, they don't want you to cook that, you know, because you're there, you're the cook for the monastery and under the direction of the person in charge. Okay, so anyway, I found that a lot better, and hopefully, I was easier to work with, because sometimes if you're overly planned and you're focused on the plan, you kind of lose sight of the people. You know, and that's actually one of the most important things I learned about the kitchen. You know, the food, in a sense, you know, although it took effort and planning and all that, okay, you know, it was medium easy, in a sense, especially after you've been doing it for a while. And of course, you know, we all know the disaster of overconfidence. But the people is what is difficult. You know, working with the people in a harmonious way. You know, somebody once said to us here, if you live in a big family, somebody's always having a problem. Well, you know, a monastery is a big family, and sometimes somebody's having a difficulty. But just people getting along, you know, or people dealing with what they're dealing with. You want to be as helpful as you can. And I think, you know, just as an aside, you know, I wouldn't quite call it a regret, but my one niggle about the work I did is I wish I was more generous. I'd been more generous. Because I think that's the key to being in a position where you're in charge of things, being generous. Okay. So I give this advice to people who I see putting a lot of effort into planning. Hopefully it's not unwanted advice. You know how it is when you get unwanted advice. But if I see people putting, you know, a lot of effort into planning, I don't discourage them from planning, but I say, well, you know, you might want to have a loose plan, because then you allow for change and the unseen, you know, and that which you can't control. And you can respond to it better because you're not stuck. You know? Okay. So, I mean, that's just all in this whole idea of not being stuck with the perfection of something. Because perfection and the perfection of things as they actually are, they're kind of different. You know, this an idealistic perfection we have in our head and the way that things are, they usually don't quite coincide perfectly. Okay. Years ago, when the monks ran the Buddhist supply shop here, someone put a saying on the wall wall in the shop there, kind of a nice Buddhist saying to help people working there. And this saying supposedly was found on a wall in a Tibetan monastery. Nobody really knows the source of it. Okay, and the saying is, once life's little cares annoyed me. When life's little cares were few. Let me read that again. Once life's little cares annoyed me, when life's little cares were few, and one fly in the ointment put me in a dreadful stew. But life's stern troubles taught me each little good to prize. I now rejoice to find some ointment in my little jar of flies. It's a nice saying. But there's something in that, okay? So this fly, I looked on the internet. Fly in the ointment, okay? According to Wikipedia, it's a fly in the ointment is a small defect that spoils something. And thus is a source of annoyance. Okay? And they say that likely the source of this phrase is the King James Bible. So there must be something in there about that. And today, this saying, fly in the ointment, has apparently come to mean that there's something wrong hidden in an unexpected somewhere. Okay. I kind of like the Tibetan version of it, you know, actually. And I think if it was a Tibetan version, it was probably much more universal than the King James Bible, because I doubt they got it from the King James Bible. And the nice rendering, the Buddhist rendering of this, is that flies in the ointment don't have to be annoying. They can be seen for what they are. They're flies in your ointment. And you can be grateful that there's a little bit of ointment in your flies, although I don't know if you'd want to use the ointment. Okay. So, again, this saying, you know, it kind of points to this fact that we can't control all the conditions. And I think that we also might not want to obsess about making the perfect offering. I mean, I've had that in my life where I'm so stuck on something that, yeah, I'm just stuck, quite frankly. It's not the perfect offering. It's just my idea of the perfect offering. And as we know, Buddhist practice and training take dedication and real effort. Okay, so my saying of a loose plan doesn't mean that you put less effort in. It's just a kind of different kind of effort. Effort's a very interesting word, because we can take it as this, you know, head down, just plow ahead, you know, whatever happens. Or we can have it head up, and we've been looking at what happened and responding to what happens. I think that's a better way to go. I was terrible with that as a football player. I just put my head down, rammed into everybody. Well, I did damage to my eyes. You know, I wasn't very smart. So the type of concentration that we're talking about or focus in our Buddhist practice is more based on letting go than holding on to a way things should be. So it's more based on letting go, okay? Because when you let go, you can get things out of the way. And when you can let go of your opinions, there tends to be space where other ways of doing things or ideas can then enter in. Okay? And so although we are fully responsible for our lives, the Buddha talks about how we should listen to the wise. You know, we run across wise people in our lives, people who have wisdom about living and what's things that help. Okay? So it doesn't conflict that we are responsible and that we listen to those that are wise. Because just in the admission, if we can admit that there are those that are wiser than us, we open a door. And if we open a door, we let the light in. And that makes all the difference in the world. Thank you very much.